Mountains, we all face them as we seek to influence the next generation. Get equipped to conquer the challenges, summit the peak, and shape exceptionally thoughtful, compassionate, and flourishing human beings. We call it Ancient Future Education for Raising the Next Generation. Welcome to Basecamp Live. Now your host, Davies Owens.
20-some years ago, if you said to someone on the sidewalk the words classical education, they might have looked at you with a perplexed look, as classical education wasn't super well known or understood. Yet today, there has been rapid growth and high demand for classical Christian schools around the world in all shapes and sizes, from five-day schools to homeschools to hybrids. So the question is this just a fad? Or are we, in fact, in an educational renaissance with more people than ever understanding and valuing this future-focused education? My guest today has a unique vantage point that will encourage you as parents and as educators. Stay tuned for this episode of Basecamp Live. Welcome to yet another episode of Basecamp Live. Things are really going and growing in this world of Basecamp. I'm leaning in full-time with our amazing journey we've been on for 7 years. And I, as always, I say, let me know where you're listening from, info at Basecamp Live. Let me know what's on your mind. I'm getting out more than ever to speak and connect with so many of you. We're also doing a little refresh work. The website's got a new look to it. There's some additional features. We've added a partners page and social media. We're leaning in. If you've been over to Facebook or YouTube and put in Basecamp in the past, you might have seen something a little out of date. All that's been refreshed and is taking on the new look of the site and these current episodes that come out every week. So a lot going on, and always it's just a joy to be a part of you and what God's doing through classical Christian schools all around the world. So thankful as always for the sponsors that come alongside us here each episode: America's Christian Credit Union, the Classical Learning Test, Gordon College, Grand Canyon University, and Wilson Hill Academy for sponsoring this episode. My guest today, Jeremy Tate, is a great friend and a true educational reformer. He is a key voice in the classical Christian school movement. He was a former college admissions test prep consultant and counselor back in the day, and about 8 years ago, he was alarmed by the lack of logical and philosophic-based subject matter of the two dominant forms of entrance exams. He just found a lot of things that were being asked about students to evaluate them on the ACT and the SAT were significantly lacking. And so he had this audacious goal of creating an alternative, which today, 8 years later, is doing very well. It is accepted by hundreds of colleges and universities around the world. He also offers a number of K-12 resources. In fact, you know, CLT is one of our sponsors in part just because we believe so much in what they're doing, strengthening classical Christian education. And so if you're not aware of what they're up to, you're going to hear more about it just in Jeremy's conversation with us, but you can also check it out on our partner page or at cltexam.com/Basecamp. So without further ado, here is my conversation with Jeremy Tate. Jeremy Tate, welcome back to Basecamp Live.
Davies, love being here. Thanks for having me.
It's always good to have you, Jeremy. You have a fantastic vantage point. I like to think you're kind of in this air traffic control tower looking across education in our country and around the world. And there's some pretty exciting things happening in this area we talk about all the time, classical education, classical Christian education. What are you seeing, Jeremy, as you look around right now nationally? What's going on?
Yeah. Oh, man, Davies. I mean, we are living through a historic, massive disruption, you know, and I wonder if even the wildest projections for what classical ed could be like in 3 or 5 or 10 years, I think they may all be very, very conservative. You know, there was an article that dropped just this past week. I think it was actually in Politico, covering the number of classical schools that are out there, you know, over 1,500, you know, self-described classical schools, classical Christian, Catholic schools, classical charter schools. It's incredible. I mean, I think about the short time, not that short, but in the 8 years, even since we started CLT, the early days, like everybody we talked to, we were having to explain, well, what is a class? That's a thing. There's a classical school. There are many classical schools. And now everybody you talk to, they know about this movement. They have some kind of a reference point, you know, their niece or nephew is in a classical school somewhere. And I think folks are understanding this is a superior kind of education and maybe a solution to the mainstream failing educational establishment.
Well, and I think a lot of people listening and I hear this as I travel around the country, I'm speaking more and visiting schools more than I ever have. And, you know, certainly COVID lit the fire under a lot of parents to reevaluate the educational choices they were making. It caused many to jump into any variants of a classical school. And now they're, in some cases, they're kind of a couple of years into it, and they're kind of looking around going, well, is this really the right decision? Was it a reactionary decision? You know, is this just a bunch of people that are kind of in a moment of cultural fear and anxiety, just saying, let's just go backwards. Let's all just find our Amish buggies and kind of head off into the nostalgia. And maybe that's a better way to navigate the crazy world we're in. That's not what you're seeing. You're seeing folks coming in for good reasons and for healthy reasons, not just reactionary reasons, into something that feels kind of old and traditional.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, in some ways, it's so radical and kind of insane. Like, the world is moving so fast. And if you're unplugged for 10 minutes, like, you miss so much. And to have students unplugging them from tech, from the here and now, and like, to be learning Latin, to be reading stories that are, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years old, is really kind of countercultural. But it's classically educated students. And I wonder, Davies, if this is why we've seen the tipping point. They're different. Anybody with two eyes, you don't have to have a classical education to see with your own eyes that these students are more grounded. They're more virtuous. It's exactly what we need. And I think that's why we're seeing this explosive growth.
So if some of these new to the movement parents jumped on the elevator with you and you had a moment and they ask you, hey, Jeremy, what is classical education? What's the actual elevator pitch you give them? What do you say to them?
Totally. I always now, you know, after doing this for 8 years, Davey, start with the telos, start with the goal. That a classical education, the whole point of it is the cultivation of virtue. That it's a deep dive into what it means to be fully human, right? And often, you know, when I get a chance to speak, I'll tell the story of working in a public school, many public schools. And when I would ask students, why are we here? What's the point? Every student, every time, would always say something about a job. That was it. Nothing about wisdom, nothing about growing in a love for Christ and church, nothing about growing in virtue. It was just this very mechanical, you know, just got to get a job. That's the whole thing. And I think parents know intuitively that that's right. You know, and that we've bought into this very impoverished vision for what education is. And classical ed is coming and resetting, you know, hitting the reset button. I love the analogy of milk. You know, sometimes I use that of like the modifier organic for organic milk. You didn't need it 150 years ago. You didn't need it until we started putting a bunch of junk into milk. And now to describe the same thing, you use organic milk. You know, what is classical education? It's traditional education. It's education as it always existed in the West before the country went insane.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's great. Today it's more like strawberry milk with like sparklies floating in it. Like, that's probably more analogous to what modern education feels like.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
So share a little bit of your journey. And again, we talked about this in a past podcast, but it has been a while. And just sort of, how did you find, you didn't grow up in this, like, again, just, I think, again, oh, so many people listening, this is new to them. It was new to you. How did you get involved?
You know, I wasn't a good student growing up. I didn't pay attention. I was bored out of my mind in school. It was punishment. I became a believer going into my senior year in high school at a Young Life camp. Somebody gave me a copy of Lewis's Mere Christianity. And it's a pretty common story, you know, when went from there to reading Screwtape Letters and more Lewis. And then I had a moment after, in between my sophomore and junior year in college, my wife, we dated through college, broke up with me. I ended up driving up to Alaska to live in a tent and work in the slime lines all summer. But I had no form of entertainment but reading. And it was my first time. I was actually trying to impress her and win her back. Because she had taken a class on redemptive themes, I think, in Russian literature. And I was like, oh, I'm going to read some Brothers K and Crime and Punishment and impress the girl and win her back. And I had never really understood even why people read fiction. You know, I was reading Christian apologetics and church history at that point, but I was like, why would you read something that didn't even happen? And I was and part of it was because there was nothing competing. There was no technology. There was nothing. I could be bored. I could look at the fire or I could read, and that was about it. And so I was absolutely immersed, and it changed my understanding of education. And then one more thing to add here, you know, when I was got into youth ministry 2007 or so, students at Annapolis EP Church were coming either from Rockbridge Academy or the local public high school, or from Annapolis Area Christian School. The Rockbridge students, though, were really different. They were all different. And it was the first time I had seen the fruit of education manifest itself in such a concrete way.
Well, and I think that's often, you know, back to the elevator ride, you know, you can describe it, but so often I say, just go sit in a classical Christian classroom for a few minutes. You'll be amazed at both the capacity of a young child when put into an environment where they can really become who God wired them to be intellectually, spiritually. There's a lot of depth there. I know I've heard you talk before. Alan Bloom's 1986 book, Closing the American Mind, was a very influential read for you, as it was for many people, even though it's four decades old. Why was that book part of that sort of understanding and discovery for you coming into classical education?
I think it drove home what was lost and how recently it had been lost. You know, so Alan Bloom probably started at UChicago in the late 1940s. You know, the Closing the American Mind doesn't come out until 1986, you know, towards kind of the end of his career. And just the radical transformation of the students he was teaching. This is kind of a sub-theme of the book. They were very different, you know, the students in the 40s, kind of before the whole youth culture and everything else, than they were, you know, in the 1980s. And so we were losing all connective tissue with the old world, refined taste. I think Bloom really drives that home in a way. And the other thing about Closing the American Mind that was really powerful is this kind of hatred of America that now is pretty commonplace in a lot of K-12 schools, a lot of colleges and universities. And Bloom, in the very beginning of the book, actually makes the case that any culture anywhere that has had any shot at survival actually thinks they're pretty great, if not the very greatest, you know? Otherwise, like if you're France and you think Britain's better, like just go ahead and surrender and, you know, be part of the British Empire. Like they had to believe that there was something worthy of defending in their way of life. And we have lost that. And it puts the country, I mean, it's a huge national security issue. I think the miseducation of America, I think Bloom nails it. And of course, it's gotten far worse, you know, since 1986.
Yeah, no, that's a really good, you know, again, think about the value propositions of classical education. I mean, it's not a political education, but just faithfulness to American history means you actually tell the stories correctly. And it does engender a sense of value for our country and appreciation for, you know, the intellectual inquiry and discovery and all these things that made our country great. It was embedded in its history. So I think that's another interesting value proposition there. Why don't we take a quick break? I want to come back and I'd love to get your take too. We've, you know, we're really kind of addressing parents here and just saying, hey, you may be new to this classical thing. And here's a reminder of why you made the right decision and we're going to go the distance. I want to get your take on, you know, I think students, one of the challenging things in a K-12 journey is, you know, that the grammar primary school students are, they're kind of dutifully wearing uniforms and studying Latin and doing all those things, but we actually encourage them to start thinking logically in middle school. And I'd be curious if you had a bunch of logical thinking and rhetoric speaking middle and high schoolers, you're trying to give them sort of some grounding and confidence in this decision. It's not just their parents, for them to own it. I want to know how you would react to that opportunity. We'll be right back with Jeremy Tate. I want to take just a moment during our break and let you know about the great work that's being done by Wilson Hill Academy. They offer a vibrant, rich, and accredited classical Christian education available to families and schools almost anywhere. With a click of a button, students join master teachers and friends live online from all over the world to engage in deep and lively discussions, solve math problems, conduct science experiments, translate Latin, deliver thesis presentations, and so much more. At Wilson Hill, students make lifelong friends and graduate well-prepared for college and beyond. Discover what's possible for your family or school at wilsonhillacademy.com. Over the past 2,000 years, the West has developed a successful educational model that guides students towards mature, independent thought. But so many universities have abandoned that model and their responsibility to students. That's why Basecamp Live is so proud to partner with Gutenberg College, a Christian Great Books undergraduate college in the Pacific Northwest that embraces this time-tested approach. At Gutenberg, students are encouraged to boldly pursue truth within a biblical framework. They do so with peers and faculty mentors in lively small group discussions. To find out more, go to gutenberg.edu. Jeremy, I want to get your opinion on what you would say to that middle high schooler who is kind of coming into their own independence and looking around going, man, they're friends of mine that don't have to wear these silly uniforms, and they don't even have homework, and they get to do this STEM thing, building robots all day. They're gonna live in the coolest AI world of the future, and we're over here going backwards, reading a bunch of old dusty books. Help me understand why I shouldn't grumble with my parents about my education, but really appreciate it. What do you say? Yeah.
Oh, man, that's a great question. Yeah, you know, we've got six kiddos in the Tate house. My oldest is a senior, and, you know, when we took her out of the public schools, I think she was in fifth grade. Yeah, fifth grade, she finished in the public school, and then since sixth grade, she's been out, and we homeschooled her in middle school, and she wasn't a happy girl. And, you know, one book that she did read was Becca Merkel's, I think it's Classical D, Classical Me, and addressing this, I think a few things. You know, one is when I've toured schools, Davies, some of the schools I've been really impressed with. The Heights in Potomac, Maryland is a great example. It's an all boys Catholic school, but they really, really encourage being physical, you know, for, you know, they wrestle, they kind of give the boys, you know, the freedom to walk on the pond, even if it's not totally frozen, and just let them fall in. Like, why not? It's very counterintuitive for like what almost any other school would do, but it's all based on this formation. So I think of, you know, especially my middle school boys, they have just this innate need to be wrestling, you know, all the time. And I think once they can get that kind of out of their systems, I think they're able to get dialed in. Part of this is just the way that it's presented. I think students are actually, they know how silly it is when their teacher is trying so hard to be relevant, you know, when their 55-year-old teacher plays, you know, Jay-Z or whatever, hip hop, and it's, oh, I'm cool and edgy too, and I'm relevant. Like, just stop. No, you're not. The kids don't, they're laughing, right? But there's something really cool. And if it's presented right, you know, when a teacher says, you know, this story has been passed down for more than 100 generations, you know, maybe in the case of the Iliad and the Odyssey, you know, and now it's your turn. There's a deep hunger, you know, there's a sacredness to all of classical education where we're passing down timeless, beautiful, old things. And I think that the appetite, hunger for that is way higher than in middle schoolers than we often give them credit for. You know, I just took my fifth grader to Budapest and we did cool things. We, you know, on the way back, we went on the London Eye and we did some things that, you know, fifth grader would like doing. His favorite part, though, was St. Stephen's Cathedral in Budapest, you know, and he was just mesmerized by, you know, some of the relics and some of the very old. So there's a mystery and a beauty that draws, I think, especially
that's a great
people into this
perspective on, you know, in an age of the flippant and the disposable, the sacred becomes even more desirable. I mean, we certainly see that in kind of a move towards more liturgical churches on the part of many. But I think that, you know, that is a, we tend to think that's the last thing that a young person would find exciting, that, you know, it's all glittering and sparkles and their screen on there. But I think there's a desire for something deeper. And I think if we sort of celebrate that and lean into that and help identify it as part of stepping into a longer tradition that allows you to have the good life. I mean, I always say so often we kind of present classical education as the antidote to all the bad stuff, as opposed to leading by saying we're the guys that have the best stuff. This is the good life. You're not yeah. It's not just a reaction against something, kind of an education. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh yeah, totally. You know, and kids get the analogy. I mean, they need to be sold on the concept, you know? You know, mainstream ed is Skittles and potato chips, and classical ed is steak, you know, that's been marinating, you know, for a long time. Cultivating those appetites, I think, for the higher things. And, you know, a student first has to understand what they ought to want before they can start to work on actually wanting the thing. So it's not easy work, right? I mean, this is the job of a classical educator is not an easy job. you know, and shaping affections in this kind of way when there are so many easy to digest, tasty treats outside of it. Yeah. It's hard to get them.
Well, in that vein, sure. Maybe shifting a little bit our topic focus here on the general idea is sort of, is classical education truly the right education for this cultural moment? And I think there are a lot of goalposts that parents in particular have in terms of K-12 needs to accomplish the following to then get to the next stage. And so, you know, the historic goalposts that you've been very involved in and knocking down and rebuilding a better goalpost has been, if my kid can just get through K-12 and get the right score on the right ACT, SAT, then they get in the right college and they get the, you know, check the box. And eventually they get the right retirement home someday. It's all in this grand scheme of, like, you know, pursuing the ultimate American dream. People through 8 years ago, you said, wait a minute, these goalposts maybe aren't necessarily the right goalposts, especially if you're kind of a classically minded person. So what's wrong with the kind of goalposts? And I think a lot of parents listening are still thinking it is all about getting to the SAT and the ACT, even though those are not even being used by a lot of schools. So kind of give us some frame of reference here.
Yeah, Davies, I love that. And, you know, so many times over the past 8 years, when we start talking about what we're doing, people say, oh, so like, this is like a prep, you know, for the SAT and ACT. And we're like, no. This is a competitor. This is a whole different test entirely. And it's a weird idea that the thing that is tainted is the measuring stick itself, right? Every school, you know, every school system, ACCS, you name it, they need to have hard metrics to track and to showcase academic progress and success and what that looks like. But what happens when the measuring stick itself is part of the problem, when the measuring stick itself is driving schools in the wrong direction? And so, you know, essentially, and I always say, had we known then what we know now, we probably never would have started CLT. You know, we had to be kind of dumb enough to not have any idea how hard the road ahead would be, you know, but it's at the time it seemed like, yeah, how hard would it be to just like swap out the tests, you know, and instead of reading a bunch of, you know, super, you know, meaningless, you know, often, you know, aggressively secular passages, what if they were reading C.S. Lewis and Chesterton and Flannery O'Connor and Aristotle and Dante instead? How cool would that be, right? So it was really launched out of just imagining. I have clear memories of teaching the SAT, and I would do the same old SATs over and over and over. I knew them so well, but I remember kind of daydreaming, like, how cool would it be if instead of reading this passage, which clearly undermines marriage or is clearly pushing this, you know, all the polar bears are dead and it's your kid's fault or whatever, this predictable agenda is instead drawing them into this world. And one more thing with this, I wanted to just share. I saw firsthand the influence of the College Board at a school. You know, in 2014, I transitioned from the public school arena into a Catholic school. And one of the big shocks for me, Davies, was seeing the influence of the College Board, you know, at this school, so much so that students were opting out of classes that were not for credit. They didn't want to take AP. They didn't want to take Intro to Christian Apologetics or Intro to Philosophy because it wasn't any AP points. And it was really that experience that just kind of gave me a conviction that we have got to create an alternative.
I mean, what a monster. David and Goliath kind of... You know, like you said, you probably best that you didn't really know what you were about to get into there, taking on Goliath. But you have had 8 years later, God has been faithful. You guys have been faithful. And just share a little bit of just the impact. I know, especially in the state of Florida, you guys have really gained some enormous traction.
Yeah, it's been wild. I mean, since the day one, you know, the first test, June 2016, David, we had 46 students nationwide, the whole country, 46 students that were taking it. And there's this really hard catch 22 with launching a standardized test. And essentially the catch 22 works like this, is that you can't really have a test norm referenced or standardized until you have massive volume. And you can't really have massive volume until it's already standardized and norm referenced. So it's really tricky. You have this catch 22 kind of in the beginning, but essentially it was getting colleges excited about an entrance exam that would reflect their own academic mission, you know? And so when we presented this to Grove City and Thomas Aquinas and Hillsdale and Franciscan and Christendom and Patrick Henry College, so many others, they missionally got behind the idea first. And so it was years and years of getting more colleges to adopt, which then made it more interesting and more exciting for homeschoolers and secondary schoolers. And that really culminated into what happened, you know, about a year ago now, where CLT got into legislation in the state of Florida. Essentially, Ron DeSantis is maybe tied into a presidential campaign as well, was in a fight with the College Board. Understandable. He wasn't happy with some of the ideas they were pushing under kind of the guise of AP African-American history, and said there's got to be an alternative out there to the College Board. And we were in Annapolis thinking, we actually don't know of too many. And, you know, within a week, we were on the phone with the folks in Florida and getting into the legislation. And what the legislation did is it tied CLT to two things. One was graduation requirements in Florida, and the other is Bright Future. So Bright Future is, if you're a Florida student, you get a 96 now on the CLT. You go to the University of Florida or Florida State for free, full tuition covered. The idea of Bright Futures is to keep the brightest minds in the state of Florida. But what this has meant for us has been just crazy. Typically in a good year, CLT will like double the number of test takers we serve. This year is going to be about 12X. So going from 30,000 to probably around 300,000, if not a bit more, just in this academic year. It's been so much that we've actually had to put caps on a number of our tests already this spring, as we're just working to scale CLT Tech and CLT operations in a way that can still give our great schools, you know, like the Ambrose School, a good experience.
And just to clarify for folks, because I've at times early on when I would say, oh, it's CLT, the classical learning test. You're called, no, it's not classic. It's classic learning test, which I'll explain that because it's really, again, kind of back to the idea of the organic milk we talked about earlier.
Totally. Yeah. I've heard the story a few times about Coca-Cola Classic going back to
that was 1983. Classic. That was a horrible moment.
They had a product that
I remember. I'm from Atlanta. Like you don't mess with Coca-Cola.
Okay, so you may know more. Okay. So you know more about this than I do. Yeah. But it wasn't always Coca-Cola Classic. They had to mess it up first and then they went back. And I think we've messed up typical American education. And so what we mean is going back to the genuine article, and classic. We didn't choose the name classical because there's no Greek, there's no Latin. And currently, you know, in Florida, we've got a ton of kids who they haven't had a classical education at all, but now they're taking the CLT to get into Florida State or the University of Florida. And so along the way, they're reading this test with Chesterton and Aristotle and these passages that maybe they're seeing for the very first time. Which is a lot of fun for us.
Yeah. Well, let's take another break. I want to come back and, again, staying on this general theme of is classical education the right education for our cultural moment. And so, again, a lot of folks make this early buying decision into the elementary ages, and then it's like, oh, wait, real college is coming. I want to make sure that my child is ready for all of the things that they're going to be asked or expected, the goalpost, as we talked about. So I want to, again, just dig into this a little bit more, just kind of advice directly to parents and maybe even educators on just let's making sure that the main thing stays the main thing and we don't get distracted with the the world's goalposts. So we'll be right back and get some final thoughts from you.
Yeah.
Grand Canyon University is a private Christian university in beautiful Phoenix, Arizona. They believe that each student is uniquely made in the image of God with a calling and a purpose. And by offering 330 academic programs, including 275 online, they are ready to put your student on a path to achieve their unique academic, personal, and professional goals through their extensive bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees. Let your student find their purpose at Grand Canyon University. It's private, Christian, and affordable. Visit gcu.edu. or the Basecamp Live partners page, and please let your GCU enrollment counselor know that Davies at Basecamp Live sent you. As schools and families, we engage with businesses every day, and unfortunately, many of them are increasingly embracing more progressive ideologies and practices. That's why Basecamp Live, we're proud to partner with America's Christian Credit Union, a banking institution that only serves and invests in kingdom causes. So whether you're managing a school, a home, a small business, ACCU can meet your banking needs while upholding biblical values. Find out why tens of thousands of families and ministries across the country, including Basecamp Live, have chosen to bank with ACCU by going today to americaschristiancu.com/Basecamp Live. So Jeremy, just want to get some final thoughts from you again in going the distance, holding tight. Classical used to be 20 years ago, I think it was even harder. People kind of looked at you, maybe like early days of homeschooling. Like, is this like a real education? And now we see colleges offering scholarships for classically educated students. And, you know, again, some perspective on what you're seeing as far as good advice to parents that are thinking, is this really the best decision all the way through 12th grade?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, and maybe this is not good news, but I think it's going to increasingly be the case. Like, that just sending your kid to a classical school is not going to be enough. And I think, Davies, that's why what you're doing at Basecamp is so crucial, is that the parents, and I love the catechism of the Catholic Church, parents are the first and primary educators. I think everyone in this movement, Catholic, Protestant, you name it, secular, has to agree on that, that parents are still the first and primary educators, and they need to take ownership of this vision for education and participate in it with them. You know, myself and many others my age, we're kind of getting re-educated. We didn't grow up with this. I'm reading all the time books that I should have read, right? And was never presented with. Or I'm trying to learn some Latin on a Duolingo app or stuff. You know, this education that now students are getting. So I think that is what really, really needs to happen at the most fundamental level. And look, we're going to see, and I think this is already the case now, but it's really going to be the case in 5 or 10 years, that, you know, having gone to a classical school is going to be good for the resume. These are clearly better. And so schools are going to be adding the name classical, even if they're not actually very classical at all. I think that's why it's so important that we have groups like ACCS and SCL that are doing the hard work of making sure that there's a bar for membership and what it means to be considered a classical school.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And we were kind of joking at the break. It's like trying to sell purple Kool-Aid and then dumping vitamin C in it and going, it's good for you. You're like, well, hold on. Just because you read a couple of great books on top of a progressive curriculum doesn't exactly make it a classical school. So it's kind of got to good the distance all the way to the core. What are you saying? You know, this just kind of tack on this question, because I know we touched on it briefly, but I think in a culture that is so enamored with technology, what do you say to the family who says, okay, Jeremy, I'm completely on board with the classical thing, but I really do think my child has strength in math and science, and is this putting him or her at a disadvantage as they kind of head into college? What would you say to that question?
Yeah, I think we're growing there, right? I think as a movement as a whole, I think, you know, schools right now, classical schools, are having graduates. You know, one of my dear friends, Michael Ortner, his son just went to Notre Dame, you know, coming out of a distinctly classical education, both homeschool and at Meadowview, to major in math, right? And that love for mathematics was cultivated because math is inherently beautiful, right? And I think maybe it was 20 years ago, maybe we didn't talk about it as much in the movement. I think folks are now saying that we can be leaders. I'm on the board now, Davies, of the new Catholic, the Catholic Institute of Technology. This is a new startup university in Castel Gandolfo in Rome. And the idea is to compete with MIT and Stanford and Harvard. And all of their founding professors, everyone is coming from Harvard, MIT, or Stanford. And the idea is that classical educators, Christians, need to be at the cutting edge of the development of new technologies and how they are. And I hear these people talk about this real risk right now that we're in, where you have incredible, incredible technology, incredibly powerful technology that is in the hands of people who have never had any kind of ethical or moral foundation at all, right? It's just do whatever you can think of doing. And so it is not only are classical educated students well prepared for what, you know, mainstream educators call STEM, but I think they're going to need to step in and be leaders in that arena as well. And I think it's already starting to happen.
Yeah, I did folks, our listeners will know, a number of months ago, we interviewed Josh Makrowski, who's done a lot of thinking in the AI area. And he made a fascinating point I keep going back to, which is he's saying that classical educated students are actually going to be the most desired in an AI world, because AI is, again, it's not really artificial intelligence. It's large language modules that are basically driven by how well the prompts are written. So if you've been trained to think, you know, critically and logically, you're going to write a better prompt. And to your point, you're going to have an ethical spine while you're doing it too. So I think we need to, you know, we will be ready for that world. And this is not, as my friend Gordon Pennington talks about, the fusty, sentimentalized education that, you know, we're running again back towards the Amish buggies with the fearing the world. No, we're actually boldly charging into the future, very well equipped. Yeah. So that's a great comment. Well, good. Any final thoughts here? I appreciate all your time today.
No, Davey's really excited for Basecamp right now. I mean, it absolutely is. You know, 20 years ago, you had to be diehard believing in classical education, this vision for classical Christian education, to send your kid to a classical school. I mean, they're going to be meeting in a church basement or somebody's house or some other weird location. And now, you know, these schools have beautiful buildings. They've got sports teams. And so it is really crucial that parents understand and believe in and buy into this vision for education. And you're addressing that. So very grateful. Always love being on Basecamp. Thanks for the work you're doing, Davies.
Yeah. So we're just in closing, where would you direct people who want to learn more about CLT? And obviously you've got the Anchored podcast that we always recommend to folks as well. So
yeah. Yeah. CLTexam.com. Definitely please come check us out.
Sounds good. Jeremy, thanks again for being back on Basecamp. Always good to have you.
Thank you, Davies.
They always say time flies when you're having fun, and it is amazing that another episode of Basecamp Live has come to an end. Thank you so much for staying to the very end to listen. It's always a privilege to have you part of our listening journey. Shoot us an email, info@basecamplive. Love to hear from you and love to know what is on your mind. Also want to say one more time a big thank you to our episode sponsors, Gordon College, Gutenberg College, Wilson Hill Academy, Classic Learning Test, and America's Christian Credit Union. Join us next week for another episode. Tell your friends, tell your schools about the many things we're doing. You can go to basecamplive.com and hear all the details. And we will see you again in a week.